Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
You are listening to The Sound of London. This is Londoners Out Loud. I'm N. Quentin Wolfe. It just so happens that this week's episode takes place about 1.5 minutes walk from the location of last week's. But more fool me, I recorded them at completely different times, so I couldn't take advantage of that fact. And although my destination this week is one of those places that wears its purpose in its title, I wasn't really sure what I was letting myself in for. I seem to remember having poked my head around the door of the Museum of Childhood at some point and seeing what looked like an exhibition of African villages. Turns out that's not really representative of what's going on further in. In keeping with the time of year, I guess we're going to be talking a lot about toys in this week's episode, mostly toys that you definitely won't be buying anybody for Christmas. And of course, where there are toys, there are children. And collectors and podcasters. There's a hell of a background din. It does make speech a little difficult to hear from time to time, but, you know, in this festive season, it's the sound of kids seeing toys and being happy. Seems pretty appropriate to me.
Hey, baby, let me take you down to a place of strange sights and sound you ain't never seen the like before. Just a stone's throw from your front door.
Before the storm. I know what's about to happen. I know that when I open the large set of double doors just there, all hell is going to be unleashed. Hell in the form of small children. Lots of them. With me hiding, I don't think hiding is too strong a word, in this storeroom, with me is Catherine Howe. She's the collections manager at the V&A Museum of Childhood in Bethnal Green. Hello.
Hello there.
Are we looking forward to what's about to happen?
Oh, we are, definitely. I mean, you've got to have the full experience of the Museum of Childhood.
I'm already enjoying this place because we are in a room with certainly bits of my childhood and childhoods before that. I can see one of those big orange space hoppers that was all over the place in the 70s, a Dalek. I think I saw a Big Track on one of the shelves here. This is looking to be a promising morning. What's the remit of the museum?
Well, we're the Museum of Childhood, so we collect everything to do with childhood, in fact. People sometimes call us the toy museum, but we're so much more than that. So toys, games, dolls, obviously the usual things, but also children's clothing, nursery equipment, things like prams, feeding bottles, all sorts of things. The only thing we don't do is children's books.
Why?
Well, because we're part of the V&A, obviously they've got a huge book collection. They have the National Art Library, and so all the books in the V&A's collection come under the National Art Library.
And there is a toy museum, isn't there? I was looking at toys more generally. There's a toy museum somewhere in West London, I think. What's the dividing line then for you? If we're talking about sort of the experience of a child, are we limited to kind of material things that they'd handle during their childhood? Or how are you defining it?
Yeah, well, I would say most of our collection obviously is things. It's the things that children had in the past and the present. We come right up to the present day when it comes to our collecting. But we also, what's very important to us in our collection really is trying to gather the children's voices themselves. And so we have objects of creativity that were produced by children. So at children's writing sometimes, things that children have made. So very much, you know, the whole experience.
Yeah, that's what I think I was digging for, actually. I was wondering whether we'd go down the road of what it is to be a child, how it feels to be a kid.
Well, that's obviously very difficult. I mean, most memories of childhood come from adults and they're sort of looking back. And I mean, that you know, that's important and we get a lot of information that way. But for us, the stories associated with the objects are very important. So when we collect something, we will get that memory. But even more important is something if we've got something that actually is directly associated, you know, with the objects that we're getting, contemporary with the objects. I can give you a wonderful example of something we've had in the collection just recently is some teddy bears that were given to us.
Not Giles Brandreth.
It's not Giles Brandreth. Ah. Although, yes, of course, he's famous for his teddy bear collection. This is, it's quite a famous chap called David Munro, who was an early English musicologist. Who died young, unfortunately. But when he was young, he had teddy bears, and he created plays starring these teddy bears and others of his toys. And when he used to go on holiday, he was obviously allowed to take one of his favourite toys, but he wrote letters back to the other ones. And we have been given the teddy bears that he owned, plus the plays that he wrote and the letters that he wrote. So it's amazing, you know, a real snapshot of childhood.
We're going to be, I think, braving the throng upstairs, having a poke around and perhaps going to have a look at some of the highlights of the collection, I hope. One of the benefits of you being here to guide us is that we can dispense with that first layer of stuff. You know, when you get into any subject, there's a first layer that the newbie has to climb through and, you know, the sparkly stuff that naturally attracts their attention. What is that first layer here? What's the sort of popular eye candy stuff that we're going to get rid of and go to the more interesting stuff?
Well, I don't know. It's all interesting. I'm not sure about, you know, digging layers. But when people come here, they do have their favourite objects. Well, the building itself actually is an amazing object in
itself.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, absolutely.
That might be the first layer that you're looking at. It's, you know, it's an incredible building.
It's got something of the train station about it.
It does. And people say it's either a train station or a swimming pool, but that's something to do with the noise as well, I think. But yes, it's basically a temporary Victorian structure that was moved to here from South Kensington.
Really?
Yeah.
What's it doing here?
Well, it's being a museum. It was always a museum. It was the first V&A museum, South Kensington Museum. It was moved here in 1872 and rebuilt. Obviously, it had brickwork, you know, and a lot of the stuff was added to it. But the interior ironwork structure is the original. It was along the lines of the Crystal Palace, that sort of structure. And a lot of buildings, they were only prefabs, they were temporary. And they were all built that way at that time. This is actually one of the few survivors.
This sounds like a rather odd place to move anything of this level of grandeur, I suppose, to in the Victorian period, because this was a really rough area at that time.
Yeah, I know. I mean, here we are in the East End of London, and you can imagine, 1872, that time, this was a pretty rough area, deprived area, a lot of poverty. It was an amazing thing. Actually, the fact was that the local worthies in this area had been agitating for a museum for some time, even before they were offered this structure, which was lucky because they had a bit of land here, and then somebody came and offered them the building, which was marvellous. They were supposed to run it. The only sort of supposed downside of that, it was going to be a local sort of museum, science and an education centre. There was going to be sort of a library. There was going to be a technical school. Lots of stuff going on. By the time it was actually built, the locals said, sorry, we haven't got enough money to run it now. So the V&A took it over from the very beginning.
Well, we've got to do it, haven't we?
We have got to do it, yes. And that's the history out of the way. So I think we should just look at the objects.
Now, do we need, because we may not be able to hear anything that the other person is saying for the next 40 minutes, what are you going to be showing us?
Well, I think we'll walk around the galleries. As I say, we'll pick out maybe some of our more interesting and amazing objects. But maybe look at how the museum is laid out, things like that. We've got a really interesting temporary exhibition on at the moment on board games, which kind of shows you the sorts of family friendly exhibitions that we put on here. And hopefully we'll hear a lot of people enjoying themselves.
Right. Now, after the big build-up, I'm sure they'll all... It's just about coming up for lunchtime. I reckon they'll all have scarpered and be quietly eating a sandwich in a corner.
Let's hope so.
Right, here we go.
Okay.
What's our first port of call?
Well, I think we'll go up to the Creativity Gallery, because that's a very good place to start when it comes to talking about childhood.
Oh, there's something so infectious about all these smiley faces.
Yeah, they're having a good time. It's a mixture of people having their lunch, which of course they're enjoying it, and then people going in for their teaching session. Oh, and up here in the gallery, we've actually got an activity going on, so even more noise.
Just as we go up, the learning centre there is called Claw, and I recognise that name from the Claw Ballroom in the Royal Festival Hall. Who was Claw?
The Claw family is one of the big patrons of the arts, particularly education in museums. And in fact, a lot of museums around London have their Claw Education Centre, and we're just one of them.
Now, I told you it was going to be noisy. If background noise isn't your thing, this isn't the episode for you. We've stopped outside one of the cabinets up here. There's a second gallery further up looking down onto the main hall. If you think of all those lovely Victorian town halls, that's the kind of vibe you've got here, a little more spacious though. And the glass cabinet in front of which we've stopped has a large image of a child drawing. Looks like he's from the 30s or 40s. There's a much more etch-a-sketchy 80s vibe on the box nearby, a packet of Crayola crayons. What have we got here?
Well, we're here actually, we're at the end of the creativity gallery and the end of the creativity process. So this case is actually showing us children's own work, over a couple of hundred years, in fact. So we've got all sorts of things. As you said, we've got the quite modern Crayola stuff, but we've also got some earlier drawings that were done by and paint boxes and painting materials that were done. All this work in the case is done by children.
Well, these are actually superb. In fact, at least one of the images here, if you told me that that was a 17th century political cartoon, I'd believe you.
Well, yeah, no, it could be. And this one particular that we're looking at here was a very famous chap in Vienna who got a lot of children together to create art, Francis Zizek. And a lot of his pupils went on to become famous artists later in life. And he obviously had an eye for people with talent.
Now, I don't believe these are by children. I'm looking at four expert depictions of birds. They're not really by children.
Oh, they are. They are. They definitely are. So the ones here, we have some... Well, we have an amazing... An example of just one booklet that we have that was put together by a couple of girls for their father. And they used to do this every Easter, every Christmas for his birthday. So they do these wonderful drawings, and they would also then illustrate these booklets with these amazing pictures.
The four that I'm looking at here, the quartet of pictures, would be perfectly at home in one of those large illustrated books to help you identify bird life in Britain.
Oh, yes, they are. But actually, in fact, these ones are from a sort of a teaching thing from school. So actually,
yes.
These ones are. This one here, the one with the two ducks, is I think, you would admit, another beautiful illustration.
Well,
that is done by children. But these ones are, yes, they are published ones that were used in school. But people would have copied them, the idea.
Well, let's move away from plagiarism.
Yes.
Being 4 years old is no excuse. And you're taking us along the gallery. Where are we off to next?
Well, I think we'll go down to look at some sort of inspiration. So the creativity gallery is laid out so that it looks at the imagination first of children, and then the sort of inspiration, and then the actual, you know, trialing out, to testing stuff. So when they, you know, things like construction toys, that's what we've got there. So we call it try again. You know, something is not going to work the first time, but it doesn't matter, because you're just, you know, it's part of the creativity process. You're they're having fun. So we have all these things that inspire children, and one of them, of course, is superheroes, and we have space a bit further down here with Star Wars and things like that. So there's popular culture is a huge thing as part of childhood now, but actually popular culture has been going on for longer probably than people think. They associate it with more of the modern television and film things, but actually books in the 19th century produced, you know, what was character merchandise of various sorts. Alice in Wonderland is a good example. So you would have had packs of cards based on that.
And, of course, once Beatrix Potter started doing her books, I know that's the sort of beginning of the 20th century, she was actually very keen on making as much money as she could out of the process and was, you know, produced. They had soft toys, they had games based on her characters as well.
I always imagine it was a very, very new phenomenon. The cabinet we're looking at here, if you're into your action models of Marvel and DC comic characters, then, this is going to be nectar for you. We've got Wolverine, we've got, I don't know enough of them. We've got a bloke in a mask, you know, that bloke.
Yeah, we've got the Incredibles, Thunderbirds, of course, which is the Ninja Turtles, which seem to keep going and going in new incarnations. But of course, the thing about these sort of figures is that, you know, all right, you know, they're children's toys, but actually, you know, adults are very much into this as well.
Well, I was going to ask you about that, because I don't know, there's that whole kid-ult idea, isn't there, that grown-ups are much more into kids' stuff than they should be, probably. Certainly much more so than they were. If you look back 50 or 60 years, you get people aged 20 wearing tweed jackets and trying to act like a grown-up, and now it's 50 years old and you're collecting these figurines. That's my impression of it. Is that borne out in your experience?
Oh, no, I think definitely, yes. I mean, and the whole sort of second childhood. I think second childhood thing has happened for longer. But you're right, this idea of adults now being able to maybe appreciate things that are more childish. I think it's a good thing. And it's I'm also part of this board game playing, which I'm particularly interested in at the moment because we have the exhibition. And that's obviously one of the things that people, young adults, are discovering that and discovering that it's a fun thing to do.
I always got the impression that board games and parlour games are a slightly more controlled environment for people to have fun in, you know, organised fun.
Yes, I suppose it is. You always have rules, don't you?
Well, exactly, so, yeah. Whereas this second childhood, because second childhood used to mean that decline that one experiences in old age.
Yes, well, for me, I think what I regard as second childhood is people who collect, you know, Dinky toys or Hornby trains and things like that. So, and in fact, of course, the companies that make these completely cater for that now. So you have the fact that those sort of things were made just for children, and now they're made, in fact, just for adults.
Just for collectors, yeah.
Yeah, I know.
So it must be that in amongst all the pieces here, you've got one or two that people would give their eye teeth to get hold of.
I think so. I mean, you talk about collectors. One of the things we do have in the collection is the Palitoy archive. So the Palitoy company were a big British company who existed from, you know, the sort of 1930s onwards, went bust in the 1980s. They made the original Star Wars toys and also Action Man, first Action Man stuff in England. When the company went bust, they basically gave us their stuff. So we have in the collection a lot of this early material, which is amazing to have. But we also have, they collected, as well as their own things, they collected toys and games that were made by their competitors. And they also had a lot of designs from themselves and from other people, which, of course, I mean, that's another very interesting part of our collection that people might think that we have. We do have sort of archives that sort of look behind the sort of toys and games and the way they were designed, the people who designed them, people who sold them, things like that.
Should we carry on moving?
Yeah, let's go.
If you wanted to dress up as a Thunderbird, there's the necessary costume there. Cast figurines for what looks like it might be a TV show or a film called The Black Hole.
Is that a television series, sci-fi television series of quite a long time ago? A whole case devoted to Star Wars, of course.
Well, of course. We've got those, was it Kenner figures? No, Palitoy.
And Kenner. Kenner with the American sort of arms, same company. So now we've got to start collecting the new Star Wars stuff as well, of course. So we have the old stuff, then we have the next incarnation, and now the new films are coming out. So we've got the Millennium Falcon there from The Force Awakens.
Just a word of advice to you, listener. If back in the 80s, if you threw away a large number of Star Wars toys, what you shouldn't do is go onto eBay now and find out what they were worth. Because, you'll spend weeks in a deep despond. That may have happened to me.
It sounds like it has.
It may have done.
Yeah, but you're right, yes. Yeah, but you would have had to keep the packaging as well.
So. Oh, they're not worth anything without the packaging?
Well, no, they can be worth things without the packaging. But,
I just had a glimmer of hope there. Let's move on. This is all a bit creepy.
Yes, well, this is another inspiration case here, and actually these are artist toys. So in effect, though some of them may have been played with, a lot of the things in this case were created by artists, and so artists' ideas of what a toy might be, and of course it doesn't always come to pass that that's the case.
If you wanted to traumatise a child, I think this is the toy collection to give them, don't you? What we're looking at here... Well, there's a clown. That's a bad place to start. And then we've got what look like 1950s television puppets. I've no idea if they ever were. But they've got wax faces that are kind of hideous. They're grotesques.
Yeah, well, they're supposed to be burglars, actually.
Oh, well, there we go. Policing would be very easy if all burglars look like that.
But yes, easily identifiable as burglars, obviously. Yes, yes.
And then there's a life-size owl who looks big enough to take you out with one swipe.
Well, it's actually a playset, and these are very popular. You know, just an easy costume to just put on.
1957, yeah. Hey, can we move on? I'm not enjoying this at all. When you say that these are artists' ideas of what toys could be, though, what are you talking about? Are they prototypes for toys?
Not exactly, no. And I mean, some of them, we've got a very good example here of a toy village, which actually would have been used as a toy and was made. And this was made by the artist David Jones, who was part of the...
part of the Monkees?
Not that. David Jones.
He had a locker? No.
No. David.
Okay.
He worked down in Ditchling with people like Eric Gill. Yep. And so he made this, in the sort of family situation they had down there. These would have been played with. And then we have another example. This is a modern version of a Noah's Ark, which is based on one that we have in the museum. So
One that you have in the museum.
Well, it is also one we have
yes.
in the museum.
What do you mean it's based on one that you have?
It's based on an older version of a Noah's Ark that's in the museum as well.
Uh-huh.
So
this looks like a Swiss Noah's Ark.
German, possibly,
well,
Swiss?
I don't know, looks Swiss to me.
Really?
If you remove the boat part of that, you could easily place that on an Alp, and nobody would complain. Don't you think?
Yeah, possibly, but yeah. I wasn't aware that Noah's Arks existed in Switzerland. Well, you're not exactly surrounded by the sea.
One mountain is very much like another. I don't know.
This is actually a modern toy maker who actually did design it as a toy. So, whereas this Happy Birthday House, probably not a toy, but somebody's idea of creating a house as a birthday present with all sorts of things going on there.
Yeah, this is chaos. There's 309 parts for a child to poke their eye out on this. Definitely not a toy. Very beautiful, though. And it's a sort of a ragdoll treehouse type arrangement.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Now we've got one of these. Oh, I've been distracted by trolls.
I know. Well, they're in the news again at the moment, aren't they?
Are they?
In the consciousness at the moment. There's a new film.
Oh, is there?
New film.
I thought we'd escaped them.
No, a new film. And they've got, like, bright pink hair and a vegetarian.
They haven't tried to revive those Cabbage Patch kids, have they?
Well, that has happened, yes. I'm sorry.
Anyway, a memory from my childhood here. I spent about half of my childhood, morning, noon and night, trying to disentangle the strings of these things. Very simple idea. You've got a wooden cross at the top, and each of the ends is attached to a bit of a flamingo. Very, very simple, and its feet walk along if you wiggle the wooden bits. And I spent my entire childhood just trying to pick apart the strings of these things.
Put
two of those together, you're finished.
And that's probably the simplest puppet you can get.
Yeah, I know.
What would you have been like with a Pelham puppet? We've got some of
I'd still be working on it now.
And they usually do come to us, actually, with the strings all completely tangled.
There we go. So who gets the job of undoing those?
Our conservators.
Which actually brings me to the question, because a lot of people who work in your sort of line of work have often previously worked doing a similar sort of thing, but with a different sort of collection. So I was wondering what your previous collections might have been, or have you always been here?
I've always been here, actually. Yeah, this has been my one museum curation experience. Mm. So yeah,
how long have you been?
I'm lucky in a way. I've been here over 25 years now.
Oh, wow, that's impressive.
Thank you.
How has the place changed in that time?
It's changed quite a lot. I mean, we've redisplayed it twice. Yeah. We're just planning the next one. So yeah. Yeah, the collection's grown, and yeah, but it's an amazing place, amazing building, amazing people who work here, which is, you know, helps.
We've reached a doll cabinet here, and there's some quite extravagant stuff. There's a that looks like Marie Antoinette in ragdoll form.
Yes, well, this...
I mean, it looks like Elton John in ragdoll form.
This is one of what we call a School for Scandal dolls. So they're based on the Sheridan play, characters from the Sheridan play. They were actually thought to be contemporary, but were later discovered to be fakes made in the 1930s. Because actually, yes, even though they are wooden dolls that you would expect from the earlier period, these were quite, as you can see, they're quite strange looking. With lots of bits and high hairstyles and fancy costumes. Mm. The one next to it is somebody, a modern interpretation of the same doll that was made for our... we had a party-based exhibition in our front room gallery, and this was one of the exhibits.
It looks a lot like Rice and Perry to me.
Actually, it does, you know. I hadn't thought of that, but you're right.
Well, you're never going to see this in the same way.
No, I'm not. But that's an amazing costume.
About half of the cabinets that we've walked past so far have had something in them that's had a sort of a creepy resonance. What is that all about, that creepy resonance that you get with kids' toys? Why should that be? Because they don't seem that way when you're playing with them as a child.
No, you don't. That's an interesting point. Children don't see that sort of creepy aspect. Dolls in particular. I mean, some people get totally creeped out by dolls as adults, but as children...
So why do you think we come to invest in with that with that quality?
Well, I don't know. I haven't really thought about that much. I mean, children, of course, you know, readily accept most things that go on in their lives, I think. So that, you know, especially when it comes to toys and they think it's something to play with, it's going to be fine. And I think, you know, as we grow older and we just learn more about the world, and we could be looking at something and thinking... You know, why was that designed like that? Like, you know, was there some sort of ulterior motive going on?
Well, you've said that.
We just get too clever, don't we?
we've just arrived at a cabinet where those sorts of thoughts might be promoted by what's within Cindy, Barbie, those kind of strange, inhuman figures that maybe little girls are encouraged to aspire to one day, or I don't know. Similarly, we've got Action Man down here. And I was just thinking, with that sort of thing, or with, I guess, Gollies might be another one in question, do you have to start thinking carefully about what does or doesn't go on display as time moves on?
Obviously, we do have to be aware of current sensibilities towards certain things that we might have in the collection. From a collecting point of view, of course, you know, these were part of some of childhood at some stage, and you can't just ignore that fact. You can't. It's like trying to sweep some parts of history under the carpet, which some countries do. But it's you know, when it comes to something as important as childhood, actually, I think. You have to retain the good with sometimes the bad.
What would you think of in the collection then that might give us a discordant window into something in the past, you know, a toy that raises questions in some way?
Well, I suppose, I mean, the golly is the obvious one. So we are very careful to explain. And it's similarly, I mean, the whole museum has a whole kind of, you know, backstory, obviously, to a lot of, particularly sort of, you're talking racial stereotypes of any sort that were depicted in the past, names that were given to, you know, to people or to toys that you know, you wouldn't use today, but that you sometimes have to use in a historical context, but you then... You know, we go to great pains to explain why this is and how we do realise that, you know, we're not trying to give offence, you know, because that's not what we do.
Were there any other toys then on a par with Gollies? You know, for example, depicting other racial types, or were there other toys of that sort?
There were some. I mean, I'm thinking we have some mechanical toys that were based on sort of the Chinamen working sort of on the docks or something like that, which again would have been, you know, at the time, I suppose it wasn't seen as anything, but now people might look at that toy and think, you know, it's depicting something that's maybe a little bit unsavoury. But one of the other things that we would have problems with in general would be maybe even soldiers and guns in particular. I mean, you know, displaying guns, because people have very strong views about those as toys.
Yeah.
Although, of course, you know, again, you know, people have played, you know, with those sort of things. We had a whole exhibition, actually, about war games, looking at And we were asking people to think about it rather than telling people what to think about how people, you know, how conflict has it all inspired, you know, toys and game manufacturer, and how people have always played, you know, that with those sort of toys, and also just acted out in a belligerent manner, and why that might be. It's, you know, is it part of human nature? Whatever.
What do you think? That's always fascinated me as a question. Why it is we thrust a plastic gun into a small child's hand?
Well, I suppose initially things like the toy soldiers and toy guns, they were made as replicas of things that were being used. And so there's a certain amount of tradition there, I think. And of course, I mean, traditionally people do have fought each other, whether it's been with guns or with swords or with anything, with rocks, you know, since time immemorial. And I suppose it's part of a lot of human nature. I don't know.
I'm not going to murder everyone around you. I suppose you're right.
No, I don't. I wasn't going to go as far as saying murder.
Slaughter?
You know,
massacre? No. I mean, I don't want to put words in your mouth.
No, please don't.
Wow. This is very exciting. We're coming up behind it. If this is what I think it is. Yes, it is. Oh, this is beautiful. Okay, we are looking at something. It's a proscenium arch of about a foot and a half. On an amazing velvet-lined wooden base, and it goes back further than it is wide, and it means that all sorts of different sceneries can be dropped into the various slats as you go back into the depths of this toy stage. And there are some figurines there. This is incredible.
Yeah, this is actually you're obviously into your toy theatres.
I didn't realise I was until now.
Okay, so this is an amazing toy actually, and this is a particularly quite an old one actually, and it comes
1825.
Ooh, thank you for reading the label. That's great. Very well.
I'm very
done.
Good at that. It wasn't easy to get this job, you know.
You could do my job, yes. This particular theatre actually comes with many, many different scenes. It was put together because you could buy all sorts of, obviously, depending on what play you were putting on, or all the background. In fact, the proscenium, as you said, is an Egyptian thing. It doesn't belong to the bucolic scene which is set behind it, where we've got some woodland and some sort of people with a horse and cart and people walking around. But these were, I mean, I think similarly to dolls' houses, these were very popular toys, sort of particularly maybe 18th, 19th century.
Well, they didn't have TV.
Exactly, and this was, and as well as like playing with dolls' house, this was you making your own entertainment, not for yourself, but you know you'd be doing it for your family or your friends, and it was, yeah, as I say, extremely popular.
I've been working on a bit of a theory with TV. Because this is essentially the same size and shape as one of those old Grundig tellies from the 70s. It's the same deal. And I've got an idea that the reason that we love staring at phones and we love staring at TVs is in some way connected with that primitive desire to stare into the flames of a fire because you've got warmth and you've got safety there or something like that. And we've somehow conflated the staring into an entertainment of about that size, which we seem very keen on, with the staring into the box with a light in it. And that has given us TV. What do you think?
I think that's very interesting. And of course, these weren't the only things that you could stare into. I mean, peep shows, for instance, was another amazing thing, which we might get round to.
Peep shows for children?
Yeah.
I thought peep shows were all about you know, what the butler was getting up to.
Oh, no.
Oh.
No, not the early ones.
I've been frequenting the wrong places. So.
No, peep shows are much earlier than that.
Oh, well, can we have a look at a peep show?
Can have a look at a peep show.
Where are they?
They're right, actually, diagonally opposite us here. So it would take us a little while. We could walk through the moving toys gallery.
Right, let's go. Yes. Past a lot of very, very lifelike moving mannequins in fluorescent blazers. They're very realistic.
Yes, they're very realistic, yes, yeah. Yeah. And they sometimes dress up in different costumes as well.
Yes.
All by themselves.
How many children do you have here at any given point? It's mayhem.
Hundreds, literally hundreds. We can have 500 or 600 school children here at any one time.
Honestly, I would just freak out knowing that there were that many children. You know when you have a house party, when your parents go away, you have a house party, and it's all good fun, and then too many people turn up, and you start to get that feeling of, oh no, what's going on here? I would feel like that all the time.
Yeah, well, I suppose I'm used to it. Yeah.
Resignation, yes.
And for the most part, they are, you know, they're well behaved.
Yeah, they do seem
looked after by their teachers and parents and things.
So. We've got some dolls there, pictures of children playing, being a bank there, teddy bears. We're going to whistle past all the articulated teddy bears.
One of my personal favourite objects in the whole museum, this teddy bear down here. He's sad, isn't he? He was never loved. He was never bought. He's got his label on him, his original label.
And now he's imprisoned here. Should we set him free?
No, sorry, can't do that. But I do give him a hug every so often.
Do you really?
If I have to open the case for any reason, you know, I'll have a quick word, make sure he's okay.
Don't you feel that might upset all the other teddy bears?
Yeah, maybe I shouldn't show such favouritism, but...
Well, some of them don't look that content with their lot, do they?
No.
That monkey looks a bit peeved.
Yeah, I think they've been talking, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, he's spreading discontent. You want to watch him? I think he's a troublemaker. Okay, we've got more puppets with strings. Or keep me away from the puppets with strings.
Yeah, look, more strings, lots more strings.
Tank.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tangled in the case, I noticed. That's very unprofessional.
Yes, we haven't untangled all of them. Now, these ones don't have strings. You're all right.
So we've got a puppet theatre here, and this is on a scale that surely no child would ever hope to afford.
No. This would be adult or family entertainment for a very rich family. Yes, it actually comes from Venice, and the Italian theatres were. I mean, Commedia dell'arte was there. The form of plays and was translated into puppet theatre. Very popular.
And this is 12 feet high with everything's very ornate and gilt, and there's an oil painting of, well, somewhere in Venice or Rome or
in the background. Yeah, I think that's St. Mark's Square there, I believe.
Did anybody ever actually own this, or was this...?
It came from a palace, yeah. We don't know exactly who used it, but yes. So
that's less something that you would have in your front room, and more something that you would use as your front room.
Yeah, I think so. You could live in there easily.
Yeah. It takes some explaining, but
and yet more puppets.
Yet more puppets. Yeah, I didn't realise puppets were so big. Oh, we've got a Charlie Chaplin puppet here. Was it? Was he an EastEnder? Have I made that up?
I think he was, Limehouse, I think. Was he from Limehouse? Why do I think he was from Limehouse? I don't know. Well, maybe that's Limelight, I don't know. Maybe I'm getting confused.
He's in London.
Yeah. No, this is the dancing.
The dancing Charlie illusion.
Because you put a very thin piece of string or thread through his arms, and so you could make him move, and it doesn't look like anything is holding him up.
Yeah, in this age of CGI, I feel that would be seen through pretty quickly.
I think probably yes,
Okay, and we've got, I can see a hint of political incorrectness going on in the background there. A very interesting chap in a turban as well.
Yes, in fact, lots of different characters.
The more I linger over this collection, the more I'll start to feel a little twitchy.
Yes, clown skeletons. It's all there, isn't it? Mm. Yeah. This is actually Sweeney Todd.
Sweeney Todd children's toys.
Puppets.
Yeah, I mean, he's got a knife tucked into his apron. Really?
To be fair, I think these ones were for more general entertainment. These were made by someone who put on puppet shows, not just for children. It would have been for adults as well. So, a nice gory story like Sweeney Todd, children lap it up.
Well, we're going through the rocking horse section of the museum here. There are two children next to each other on parallel rocking horses, racing each other furiously, completely unaware that neither shall ever win.
I know, but they love it. It's a very, very simple interactives go down very well here. We're now in the moving toys gallery.
Right, good.
So everything moving. We're starting with very simple movement down here, and we'll be working our way up through some more complicated things as we walk down.
So we've got rocking back and forth. We've got cars of all sorts here. Yeah,
so the pushing and pulling. We've got some toys over there that work by gravity or by steam, so sort of natural elements helping things
to move. Steam-powered children's toys. Should we see one of those?
Trains, yes. We've got some...
Surely not actually powered by steam.
Yes. This is a modern example. We're talking about the collectors, so this is the Mallard by Hornby. But yes, live steam.
So this looks like a train set as you would think of one. No, it can't really have steam in it. That would injure a child, wouldn't it?
Well, this particular one, of course, is for adults today.
Right.
But, 100 years ago, I mean, health and safety wasn't so prevalent.
I suppose if you're sticking them up chimneys, then, why not burn their hands off with a bit of steam?
These ones here are spirit burning,
And this one's made out of shards of glass.
Yeah. Well... maybe not quite, but obviously life's dangerous, toys can be dangerous too.
It certainly is if you've got naked flames in your children's toys and boats and parachutes.
Wind power.
Yeah, there's another one. I have one of those. There's a skydiver kite, and that functions essentially like a kite, but instead of a triangle, you've got a parachute with a little plastic guy who you fill up with water, and he's attached to the parachute obviously with a lot of strings, and guess what happens to the strings?
They get tangled.
They
get
tangled.
You've played with this, obviously.
And when you've finished untangling your puppets, then you have to start on your little dangling man.
Sand operated toys here. Sand toys again, a popular older toy. The 19th century works by a little wheel, like a water wheel, only the sand goes through it, and as the wheel moves, it makes a little figure on the other side move. Very clever. And fascinating, and children today find these fascinating. Very simple thing.
Don't you get the impression that children of yesteryear must have been temperamentally different? Because a child today, I can sort of imagine that being in pieces in about a second.
Yes, I suppose there's also the fact that, there would have been a lot less for children to play with in the past. And so the toys that they had, probably they appreciated more. I mean, children today, I think, have so much.
We're spoiled in the wider sense, aren't we, as human beings?
Yes.
Too much stuff.
Yeah, definitely too much stuff.
Do you see that reflected in the way that kids, not all kids, obviously, but in the way that kids approach what's on display? I'm asking, are they tough to impress?
Yeah. Actually, I don't think so, because they know they're coming to a museum, so they know this is something a bit special. And actually, to see something older, obviously we have modern toys as well, but to see something older that was played with, I think does fascinate them in a way that modern toys don't.
We're passing an oil painting here. This is how children... Well, apparently beating each other to a pulp is one of the pastimes on display here. several of the children are happily engaged in that.
Yeah, these are schoolboys, and obviously, yes, there's a bit of a tussle going on, but the others are playing with spinning tops. It was, a toy that's been around probably hundreds, if not thousands of years, and very popular.
Oh, and we've got some spinning tops in the display case.
Yeah, and then we've got some old ones and some new ones. We've got humming tops, and I suppose maybe not quite as popular these days, just, you know, sort of modern tops, but, you know, a simple thing. Sometimes the simple things are the best.
I wonder if there isn't a big market for making a modern equivalent, because I was looking, for example, at a plastic thing there. It looks like some sort of helicopter, and when I say helicopter, I mean a three-pronged bit of plastic, and you pull a cord and it flies up in the sky. You pass a branch of Maplin's, they've got drones going for £200, £300, £400, £500. I wonder if there isn't a consumerist-driven agenda to make very simple things big and complicated and expensive.
It's more complicated, I think. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, with the rise of technology, you know, they want to put it in everything. And, I mean, it's going to be tried at least once. And I think, I mean, you know, you see it with toys, you know, digital toys. Although I must say, I think over the last 10 years, there's been a little falling away from that. So this year, for instance, I was expecting to see a lot more, as you say, drone-based toys, but they're not there. So I think, you know, that there may be a little bit of a reversal going on there.
You really think so?
Yeah, it's possible. It's possible.
Yes,
much technology, and there being a little bit of a backlash.
Yeah, I've seen a bit of that. I was at somebody's house who's a bit Shoreditch cool, and they had a load of tin toys that were brand new and they'd just recently purchased. You know, you wind them up and they smack some cymbals together or something.
Yeah.
And they were delighted by those. But then these were people in their 20s.
Yeah, I know, yeah. And I mean, retro, of course, that's something that does appeal to, I would say, to young adults, particularly now. But, you know, no harm in that because, you know, it's there, it's out there, so more people might get to know about it and appreciate, you know, the older toys.
What are you doing about video games and all of that stuff?
All right, well, we'll come on in a little while to our small sort of computer-y display, but obviously we can't. It's a huge field, so what we decided to do is we would collect some of the kind of major hardware pieces and a small selection of the actual games that would be maybe just, you know, the famous ones. So, for instance, we've got, you know, one of the first Game Boys, you know, with Tetris. We've got Sega Mega Drive with Sonic the Hedgehog, you know, that sort of thing. And some earlier, these sort of earlier versions of computer or handheld games. So we can see those in a minute. Yeah. But first we've got to go get through Clockwork.
Oh, yes, we're still in Clockwork, yes. Absolutely, and there's a Charlie Chaplin toy. Have we looped around? Another Charlie
it's
Chaplin toy.
Charlie Chaplin, is obviously.
This
yes,
time
it's
a wind
your radar.
I think his umbrella's going to rotate if we wind him up.
You've seen him. Have you seen him work?
No, but no, he's got a great big key on one side. In the picture, his cane is elevated.
You're right. I think that's what he does. I haven't actually seen him work. What we do have, because obviously all these moving toys should move, and we can't have them moving.
That's a bit of a letdown.
But we have computer terminals, which we've actually had for quite a few years and are still going strong, which show the movement. So we actually did wind some of these up and film them. We x-rayed some of them as well, so people can see what they look, yeah, how the mechanism works inside, yeah.
Do you ever play with these? When you finish cuddling the teddy bear, do you ever get one of these cards out? And
No, you have to be very careful with Clockwork. I mean, we did it once for that, you know, to make that film. But I'd be very worried about damaging things. And a lot of them don't work anyway now, they're too old. And we've got some amazing, these are the older, you know, or automaton.
Yes, yet more nightmares here.
Yes, there are, actually.
Monkey Musicians is this one. You've got two chaps dressed in Georgian finery. They look like they're from Planet of the Apes. One playing a cello, one playing a violin.
Yeah, it doesn't help that they are a little worse for wear, I think. The costumes have obviously been replaced, but the poor faces are a little old and probably looking a little more scary than they should.
There used to be a challenge, I think, at the London Dungeon. I'm not sure if it was an annual thing, but you got to sleep overnight in the London Dungeon, and if you managed to get through that, you got a certificate. I think you could do a similar thing.
Yeah, well, we have had sleepovers.
Oh, really?
We had one quite recently that was very successful. It was good. We obviously families come in, and we based it around magic. It was a magic evening, and they woke up in the morning and had a magician do a show for them. So it's good.
Okay, and we're into Springs and Cogs. I notice they're in a language other than English. Reminds me that there might be toys from around the world that differ from what we've had in this country.
Yes, obviously. I mean, you're asking about what we collect. We do focus on British childhood, but because the experience of British childhood can be, from other countries. But obviously, we do get. I mean, even the local community here, a lot of those, would have originally come from other countries, which is why we have some different languages in the galleries. But tourists. I mean, funnily enough, we've only just started getting a lot of tourists coming here. It used to be very, very, very few. Again, we're outside that central area of London, so it's a bit more difficult to get to. We're not in people's eye when it comes to tourism. But
wave of development is breaking here now, isn't it?
Oh yes. Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Big development going on just over the road as well, I think.
Yep.
We're looking at the moment. There's an enormous case here. I'd say it's 12 feet wide, 10 feet deep, and it can take. Well, it looks like an industrial loom.
It does.
What is that?
It's actually, we call it the wave machine, and it simulates the movement of waves. Unfortunately, I can't make it work at the moment because it's out of action, resting, as it says on the label. It gets a lot of use, so it does break down occasionally. But yes, it's actually very soothing to watch. But also, I mean, obviously, it does teach a certain mechanism as well. Although I don't think many people that look at it are paying much attention to the educational aspect.
I kind of love that about toys, though, that they manage to educate you by accident sometimes. It's by design somewhere along the line, but you sort of find yourself getting fascinated in, what would I think of? Like a spirograph, for example, or Lego. You start figuring out how things work and developing skills that you didn't mean to develop while you were playing.
Yeah, I mean, that the cleverest toys do that. I mean, the ones that people actually try and design to be educational sometimes don't work at all.
We're passing lots of people on horseback.
Yeah, these are the more modern clockwork ones.
Well, they don't look very modern to me.
Lots of animals.
These look like 1950s or 1960s.
Well, that's what I call modern, I'm afraid. I mean, compared to the older ones. But yes, these are 50s, 60s, 70s. And space toys as well, of course, which became extremely popular with the space race and landing on the moon.
Yeah, 1950s was all about space and cowboys, wasn't it?
It was. It really was.
Like 60 years in the past and 60 years in the future, but not now.
Yeah, I don't know why that was. moving on to now, we're on to battery and sort of electricity. We've got a Harry Potter train set for Hogwarts Express and other well-known earlier electric trains.
Well, these are beautiful. I think I've realised what's creepier than some of these toys that we've been looking at, and by far the creepier thing is publicity photographs for the toys, which show children enjoying the toys. And it doesn't matter what the product is, they've always got this overposed, overexcited, manic look as they admire the toy. They've probably been sitting in that photographic studio for 5-6 hours, trying to keep the smile up, pumped full of sugar. You've never seen a child so happy to see a locomotive go past as the one in this picture.
You get a lot of that on the covers of boxes of games as well.
Yeah, board games are big for that, aren't they?
In particular, with these happy families.
Yeah, this family is having so much fun, you should keep away from them. Scale Extric.
Version. We do have an actual scale action, but of course there are all sorts of other versions made by different companies.
Oh, I like this one. This is Big Rig. This is by Tyco. This is in electric trucking.
Yeah, so it's just trucks instead of cars going around.
If you want to take a more workmanlike approach to your spare time.
Yeah. Well, there's a whole city.
Where do these come to you from, generally speaking?
Most of our collection is donated, which is great. The amazing public come and offer us all sorts of things.
Do you have a wish list going on?
We generally do. There are sort of certain key objects that we would really like to have. At the moment, we'll probably revise that slightly because we are planning new displays in the future, so we're going to look to see what we might need for that.
But I mean, as of this moment, is there in the back of your mind, is your magpie brain switched on for certain things?
Yes.
What have you got your eye on?
Well, I mean, we're standing by the optical toys here now, and there is a particular optical toy that we don't have, which I want to have.
Now, you're not going to name it because the value of it goes through the roof as soon as you
I think I better not.
Right.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yes, whoever's got it will suddenly be rubbing their hands together.
Well, they are very difficult to get hold of, so, yeah. But we have lots of other ones. So, yes, magic lanterns, which, again, another very popular family entertainment of the 19th century.
Yeah, this section is quite scientific. In fact,
yeah.
I was at the Royal Institution not too long ago, and some of these pieces wouldn't seem out of place there.
No, these I mean, and they were produced, obviously. We have some sort of adult versions that would have been used, but they did produce them for children. And again, talking about health and safety, you've got your little light, your little paraffin lamp.
More paraffin.
Inside your lantern, yes. And these older ones, then you have this lovely old celluloid film, which of course would have gone up in smoke at the first hint of heat.
Yes, a word to any would-be time travellers, don't go back and become a child circa 1900. You'll almost certainly perish immediately. There's a junior television set just there. And if you think about those 1950s, 1960s ones, which are the size of a refrigerator and have a small picture in them. On this one, it's a picture of Laurel and Hardy. This was made in England to look like a real miniature television. It uses a clockwork mechanism to make it work.
So actually the picture was pretty basic.
Yeah, I can't imagine it being fantastic. I'll tell you what I'm expecting. I'm expecting a light and a piece of transparent film with a picture.
Yeah, I think that probably sums it up.
Where to next?
And then, well, I think, you know, the modern equivalent of optical toys, computer games and toys.
So we've got an Xbox and one of those old Amstrads that you need to load everything up across the course of half an hour with a cassette tape.
Yeah, and the lovely Binatone version of where you played Pong on your television set.
Oh, is that one of those? Yes, let's have a look at this.
But it uses a gun.
Why would you use a gun for Pong?
Screen.
Not for Pong, surely.
Not for Pong, but for a similar sort of game.
This is for silencing other members of the family while you're playing Pong. You can switch.
Oh, it's an interesting design.
Right, we need to get in close on this one. So this one, this is about the size of a tablet. It's about 10 inches across, something like that. And you've got power, bat size, serve, main serve. And then you can choose your game on the right-hand side. There are diagrammatic options there. Shooting, target, football, squash. Squash brackets practice. Yeah, you don't want to get serious too soon. And tennis. Those are the games that you can play. And on the box we have an early 1980s family. They're all gathered round, suspiciously close. And my golly, they're having a good time watching this pixel travel across their television screen. What silly people we are. Oh, hang on. Are we allowed to have a photograph of this box in particular? I think I've just found the creme de la creme of overexcited product boxes.
Yes, he's really having fun, isn't he?
If you're listening to this on Acast, then have a look now at the picture that's flashing up before you. This takes it to a new level. This is 1972, the pinnacle of overexcited children. Right, what do we get? We came over here for like an ancient person. I realise I came over here for something, but I can't remember what it was.
Peep shows.
Oh, peep shows, yes, thank you.
And here we are, we're just at the peep shows. So these are peep shows. So they're concertinaed pieces of paper with, you know, layers of scenery.
Yeah, this is one I was thinking of at all.
No. This is particularly made famous. So the Great Exhibition produced a lot of these, based on the actual Great Exhibition. So you could look into the hall and see all the exhibits and the fountain in the middle and things like that. Thames Tunnel was another one. They're sort of things that lent themselves to looking in perspective at these sort of three-dimensional places and objects. But they made all sorts of them. Yeah.
From the angle we're looking at it at the moment, it looks like a concertina file. with you can see that the insides are decorated. So what do we do with it?
So you have to bend down.
Oh,
sorry.
No.
And you have a little peephole at the front. So I don't know if you can see into there. That's one of the great exhibition ones.
Would you look at that?
It's actually quite effective, isn't it?
It really is, yeah. I'd struggle to do it justice, actually. This is much more impressive than you'd imagine.
You need to be a bit closer, I think. Obviously, it's in the case, so it's a bit more difficult to see. Maybe this one here, which has a bigger hole.
And it's even further down. My forehead is practically touching the carpet. Okay, so this is, well, it's not entirely dissimilar to the idea of the theatrical sets that we were looking at in the little theatres back there. But with this one, because you're looking through the hole and because the different objects that are placed at intervals as we go back interact with each other and create optical illusions, you've got the sense of enormous depth and detail. They're very impressive. I should rush out and grab myself one. I've got to get up now. This is something that's different from my childhood. My failing knees. I don't remember this being such a problem.
No, you'd be crawling around the floor, wouldn't you?
Yes, exactly.
Which a lot of our visitors do. this whole idea of 3D was very popular, so this is another amazing thing called a zograscope.
A zograscope?
Zograscope, yeah. So you've got an image. It's shaped like a book, in fact, but it sort of pops out of a book, and you have a lens, and you lay a picture at the bottom, and you look at it through a mirror, reflected in a mirror, and it becomes three-dimensional.
It looks like nothing until we look through the hole here. All we've got is what looks like an enormous family Bible, open, and then poking out of it. Imagine somebody hiding in the family Bible, sticking a periscope up. That's what we're seeing here. Now we're going to look into the periscope. And we are looking into, well, it could actually be this, is it this building? It's not entirely dissimilar.
No, it's not actually this building. I think it's somewhere in Italy.
It's a bit more cathedral. Yes, it looks a bit more solid, actually, a bit more stonework going on.
Yeah, yeah.
And, well, 3D is debatable, but there's a bit more D than 2 going on. It's about 2.5D.
Yeah, possibly. I mean, from me up here, if you go back a bit, it's a little more impressive. I don't know.
No, it's not half bad, is it?
Yeah.
And so you can change the images there, can you?
Yeah, I mean, for something from, mid-19th century, I think it's pretty good. Because they were fascinated with all these optical devices. And it's interesting that they were, they became things for children to enjoy. You talk about the educational thing, I suppose they were a bit educational as well. But fascinated. The way we're fascinated with digital technology these days, it's the same thing.
Do we still have that educational, that kind of worthiness to toys? Have we given up on that?
We do. And in fact, I mean, a lot of them, some people will say a ball is educational. Because it teaches you spatial awareness and I don't know. But a lot of, I think, again, there was a period where everything was sold as educational. Mm. But again, that's not good. Now it's, we can have fun again, I think, a bit.
In the 1900s, you could be educated as to the recuperative powers of the skin on the hand.
Yes.
How long it takes your eyelashes and hair to grow back. Yeah.
Yeah.
I sort of feel like we've come to almost a natural conclusion. There's some, any other day of the week I'd have known the name of these things. They're the spinning dish with the...
There are two versions. So we've got the zoetrope, which is
that's the one I was after.
And then we've got the praxinoscope, which has the mirror, where the image is reflected. So a zograscope, you just look at it spinning and you see it move through the slits in the side, the circular drum.
Mm-hmm.
Praxinoscope, it's the image, you've got mirrors in the middle of the spinning, whatever you call that, disc, that reflects the picture. Makes the movement seem smoother.
Yeah. An enormous...
You can't see what's happening because the children have taken over.
An enormous gang of children have descended upon this and they're spinning for all they're worth. And the little gymnasts inside are having to work overtime.
Yes, unfortunately they just spin it. Some of them don't see the benefit of what they're doing.
Are you ever tempted to do it properly?
Oh, yes.
So what's your... I mean, there's a whole floor and a whole exhibition. Of course, it's the... I'm glad we've left the exhibition for people to come and have a look at, the board games.
Yes, we do have another gallery upstairs. We have a sort of childhood galleries, which that looks more, as you say, where we've been downstairs here has been more, really, I think, more about play, hasn't it, and the toys and games. The childhood galleries do have a bit more of our costume, and we look at things to do with babies, things to do with what you might be when you grow up. Our dolls' houses, of course, which are exceedingly popular up there as well. And having fun. Directly above us here is our Good Times Gallery, which is all about playing games and going to the seaside and things like that. So there's a lot more to see here, yes. You probably don't have time, do you?
Sadly, no.
No.
And I'd like to, because have you got, because it's a very London-y thing, I suppose, have you got Monopoly upstairs?
Monopoly, yes, we have. In fact, features very heavily in our board games exhibition. That's on till April, so people have got time to come and see that.
Well, I wonder if we could, just because it's one of my favourite games. Yeah, so very quickly?
Let's go.
Most museums are exhibiting only a fraction of what they have. Is that the case with you as well?
Definitely the case. We've probably got less than 10% on display. All the rest of it is downstairs where we started off. So we do have everything, you know, in the building, which is great.
Astonishing.
And of course, people can make appointments to come and visit things that aren't on display if they want to.
Right. Well, we're passing through the board games exhibition, but you know what? I'm going to neglect to tell you anything about it. Because, you know, come and have a look. Oh, there are some children in prison.
It's the Monopoly Jail.
If you'd like to see what your children look like in a prison cell, then there's the ability to put them in one here and photograph them. Maybe as a warning.
Yes, I think so. Yes.
Put your toys away nicely or else. This is what will become of you. And here's the Monopoly display case. Do I see circular Monopoly over there?
You do. Well, no. We've got something very special here. This is Monopoly before it was published as Monopoly. So Charles Darrow, who made this version of the game that became Monopoly, this is one of his own handcrafted games.
Wait a second. Where did he come from?
America.
Wasn't it London? Was this not a London game originally?
No.
I always thought Monopoly was a London thing.
No. Charles Darrow is American, and the original properties are based on Atlantic City, which is where he used to go on holiday.
Oh, I'm very distressed. I've spent my whole life thinking ill of those board games that take other cities and give. I think they're not the real thing. They're not the London game.
Oh yeah.
Oh dear.
But well, the thing is, to be fair, when it was published by Parker Brothers in America, they gave the license to Waddington's in England straight away. So the London version did come out at more or less the same time, probably a few months after the American version.
I feel like a fool. Tennessee Avenue, Virginia Avenue, St. Charles Place, Oriental Avenue, Baltic Avenue. Mayfair is Boardwalk. So there we've got the London version as well. And then, yes, what's this circular version all about?
The circular version, well, you know, they're always changing doing something to Monopoly.
What in the world is that in the middle?
Yeah, well, that's your electronic bank. This is a game without money. You have credit cards that you slot into your little machine and it transfers the money or gives you money or whatever.
Self-service banking.
Yeah. It wasn't very popular. I think people like money, don't they?
Well, I think people like not a circular thing. This looks like a serving map for some sort of...
Yeah. I mean, they kept the original properties with the colours, you know, the same, but yes. The only thing is, I mean, it, as a design, it's quite nice, and also it folds up into a smaller box.
No, I can't approve of this. This looks like if you gave the whole thing to the set designer for Buck Rogers, then they'd come up with this. This is awful. I don't approve. Can we move along quickly, please? Over here we've got... there's writing in...
Japanese. So this is a very modern Japanese set that's based around the sort of arts and crafts of Japan, which are, you know, encouraging people to make things the way they were done in the past.
Mm.
And so you build your little studios and outlets for selling instead of having houses and hotels.
Yeah, I rather like that. Good. Well, on that note, I guess we need to call it a day. Oh, you've got a waving... There's a waving cat. Of course there would be.
Yes,
one of the tokens is a waving cat. We've got to call it a day. So the board games exhibition, you said that's on until... That's on now, right? We're here. This is happening.
This is real time. And it's on until the 23rd of April next year.
I'm not sure whether we mentioned this right at the beginning, but it couldn't be easier to get here. It's essentially a case of getting yourself on the central line and tumbling out of the door of Bethnal Green Station, and you're here. It's right on the doorstep.
It is, yeah. We're just a hop, skip and a jump from the station. Hmm. Yeah. And, of course, we're free. I should say that, just in case people don't know. Completely free.
Good. And I think you also have... Do you have, like, play sessions or story times or something cool for kids going on alongside all of this?
Yeah, no, we have activities and events happening all the time. There are daily activities that happen. We have storytelling, making stuff. We have our Art Smarts area. During holidays, we have lots of things going on, usually based around whatever exhibition is on. For the board games exhibition, we've had some very good evening events, board gaming events, playing games, designing games. We've got a games quiz coming up, Christmas quiz coming up. Yeah, all sorts of things going on. You know, visit the website, it's all there.
Very good. Okay, well, we're done here. From the V&A Museum of Childhood in Bethnal Green, Catherine Howe, thanks very much.
My pleasure.
My heart aches for some far off days. No one could have left you with your name.
And that's all for this week. My thanks for this week to Catherine Howell. Thanks to Joanna Balivo and Bernie Barclay. Theme and incidental music was by Songs from the Howling Sea. I'm in Quentin Wolfe.
Sounds you ain't never seen the light before. Just a stone's throw from your front door.